एक ओंकार सतनाम करता पुरख निरपाव निर्वैर अकाल मूरत अजूनी सैपं गुर प्रसाद जप आद सच जुगाद सच है भी सच नानक होसी भी सच एक ओंकार सतनाम करता पुरख निरपाव निर्वैर अकाल मूरत अजूनी सैभं गुर प्रसाद जप आद सच जुगाद सच है भी सच नानक होसी भी सच एक ओंकार सतनाम करता पुरख निरपाव निर्वैर अकाल मूरत अजूनी सैभं गुर प्रसाद जप आद सच जुगाद सच है भी सच नानक होसी भी सच एक ओंकार सतनाम करता पुरख निरपाव निर्वैर अकाल मूरत अजूनी सैभं गुर प्रसाद जप आद सच जुगाद सच है भी सच नानक होसी भी सच एक ओंकार सतनाम करता पुरख निरपाव निर्वैर अकाल मूरत अजूनी सैभं गुर प्रसाद जप आद सच जुगाद सच है भी सच नानक होसी भी सच वाहे गुरु वाहे गुरु वाहे गुरु वाहे गुरु वाहे गुरु
वाणी गुरु गुरु है वाणी विच वाणी अमृत सारे गुरबाणी कह सेवक जन माने पर तख गुरु निसतारे अमृत पानी हर हर तेरी सुन सुन हो वै तन रत मेरी जन दूजी शीतल हो मनवा सतगुर का दर्शन पाए जियो फिरत प्रभ आया परया तो सरनाए नानक की प्रभ बेनती अपनी भक्ति लाए नानक की प्रभ बेनती अपनी भक्ति लाए
सतनाम श्री वाहे गुरु सोच सोच ना हो गई जे सोची लखवार चुप चुप ना हो गई जै लाए रहा लिवतार भुखिया भुख ना उतरी जे बन्ना पुरिया पार सहस सयाण पा लख हो ता एक ना चलै नाल केव सचियारा होइया केव कूड़ै तुट्टै पाल हुक्म रजाई चलना नानक लिखिया नाल सोचै सोच न होवै जै सोची लख वार
वाहे गुरु जी का खालसा वाहे गुरु जी की फतेह। परम सत्कारयोग गुरु खालसा साध संगत जी, we are blessed to be in the presence of Sahib Sri Guru Granth Sahib Ji Maharaj, the King of all kings. And we are blessed because we're here because Guru Sahib has brought us here today. We find ourselves in the house of Guru Nanak Dev Ji Maharaj, and Guru Sahib makes it so very clear when they say, Aape Sangat Sad Bahale, Aape Vida Karave. They make it very clear that we're here not of our own accord, but Guru Sahib brings the Sangat towards them. And that Guru Sahib is also the one that has reserved the very seat where you currently find yourself sitting in the presence of the Guru. We should do well to remember that when we wake and find ourselves thinking thoughts of anxiety, of low self-worth and low feelings in this regard. Because truly, the knower of all of our hearts is Guru Sahib. And if they've chosen us worthy, if they've thought of us worthy to invite here on this Thursday evening, then we should be thankful to Guru Sahib and grateful to be here. Last week we did Vichar and learnt together about the blessings of the Sri Mool Mantra. The Mool Mantra is the first Shabad in Sri Guru Granth Sahib Ji Maharaj. We learnt about how Sri Guru Nanak Dev Ji, when they went into the Vainadi, they went into the river, and why Guru spoke to them, speaking the first part of the Mool Mantra, and how Guru Nanak replied, Japa Aad Sach, Jugaad Sach, Hai Bhi Sach, Nanak Hosi Bhi Sach. If you think about it using the analogy of a tree, the way that great saints have described the relationship between the Mool Mantra, Japji Sahib and Guru Granth Sahib Ji, it's a little bit like this. That if you think of a great tree, it grows from a root. The Mool Mantra, more literally meaning root, is the root of that tree. The trunk that will spring forth from that tree is the Japji Sahib that we're going to be travelling through on this journey together over the coming weeks. And all of the wonderful branches of nature and leaves that will blossom forth from that trunk are all of the Shabbats, all of the beautiful Shabbats that we find before us when we are in the presence of Sri Guru Granth Sahib Ji Maharaj. And in this way we can understand the relationship between the root, the Mool Mantra, the Japji Sahib and Guru Granth Sahib Ji. Indeed, great saints have said that Guru Granth Sahib Ji is an explanation, a teaching of the meanings of the Mool Mantra. Sorry, of the Japji Sahib part. Today we're going to be commencing the belly body in this section of Japji Sahib part. When the Sidhs are speaking to Guru Nanak and they're asking Guru Nanak Dev Ji some questions about life.
सोचै सोच न होवै जे सोची लख वार।
So the Sidhs were great aesthetic beings. They had through yogic practices achieved a high and elevated spiritual status. But they had, because they were worshipped by people in this world, they had, if you want, taken a detail of the path of self-realization with God. And because people would look at the Sidhs in such high regard, they were caught up in that duality, thinking themselves to perhaps be closer to God than they were. They had not become one with the Lord. They practiced certain practices in this world, and they are now speaking to Guru Nanak and asking Guru Nanak Dev Ji about whether or not these practices can bring about self-realization. In this particular conversation, the Sidhs are asking four questions to Guru Nanak. And the first question was about Suchamda, about keeping the body hygienically clean. The Sidhs would ask Guru Nanak, that if I keep my body clean, that will I in this way be able to, through hygienic practices, achieve self-realization, become one with God? And Guru Nanak Dev Ji is replying, Soche soch na hove, je sochi lakhvar. That even if you clean, that if you, just through cleaning yourself, that you cannot obtain realization of God. Je soche lakhvar, that even if you was to clean your body lakh, 100,000 times, that even in this way, through such hygienic, cleanly practices, will you be able to obtain oneness of God? The answer is no. In Gurbachan Singh Ji Khalsa Pindranwale's Gatha, they speak about quite a humorous tale which with a Brahmin and a Jat. And the Jat is working on the fields. He's a landowner, in fact. And he's working on the fields, toiling day and night, working in the fields. And as you can imagine, his body is covered with the soil of the sort of the land that he's working on. And a Brahmin is a Brahmin who's caught up in these sort of ritualistic practices. He happens to pass upon the Jat, and he speaks to this farmer. That is what Jat is. And he says to the farmer that, look at you, every single day you work in these fields, your body is absolutely filthy. And the Jat goes on to explain that after undertaking his worldly duties, that he works on the field in this way, and after doing his work, he washes his hands 3 to 4 times a day to try and achieve cleanliness of his hands. And the Brahmin says that even with all of these efforts, you won't manage to obtain cleanliness. The Jat, looking to sort of entertain this conversation, he says, how can I go about obtaining a state of purity of my body, and then obviously a higher spiritual state? And the Brahmin gives him instructions. He says, you need to go to a field where sugarcane has been grown in the year before. And that land will be pure in such a way that when you take the soil of that land, when you take the pig's manure that has been spread across that land to fertilize it, bring it back to me and I will show you how to clean your body. And the Jat does exactly what he is told. He goes to the field where sugarcane had previously been grown in the year before, and he brings back pig's manure that had been spread out across the field to fertilize the land. And the Brahmin goes on to very specifically outline steps that he should undertake to bring about cleanliness to his body. He says, first you must rub the pig's manure from your knee up to your knees, and then to your waist, and then from your elbows down to your waist. And in this particular ritualistic practice, you must then completely cover your body with this manure. Once you've done this, then you must do koli. You must put water in your mouth and spit it out 100,000 times. 100 times. And once you've done this, then you will be completely pure. The Jat follows the instructions of the Brahmin and undertakes his ritualistic practice. And he speaks now to the Brahmin, having undertaken this practice, and he says that, now am I completely pure? And the Brahmin looks at him from head to toe. And he says, yes. And at that point, the Jat, what does he do? He fills his mouth with water and he spits it in the Brahmin's face. The Brahmin says, what have you done? He's shrieking out loud. And he is saying, what have you done? My whole day's bun, all of the practices that I've undertaken, they are now wasted because my body is now impure. And the Jat says, but hang about. You told me that if I cleaned my body, that if I did koli, if I washed my mouth 100 times, that I would be pure. So how is it that with my purity I can bring about impurity upon you? The Brahmin just smiles and he just walks away. You see, Guru Sahib is teaching us that soche soch na hove, that you could bring about a cleanliness on your body, but even that cleanliness won't last. If you have a shower and you go sleep, you will wake up in the morning with sleet in your eyes, and you'll have mucus in your throat and in your nostrils, that all sorts of impurities will naturally form upon the body. But actually, no matter how much cleanliness you keep on your body outwardly, you will not be able to bring about a state of cleanliness that will bring you closer to God.
Chupa chupa na hovei, jailai raha livetare.
Chupa, chupa meaning to keep yourself quiet. So Guru Nanak Dev Ji Maharaj is telling us that chupa chupa na hovei. It's a very interesting pankti. Maharaj is saying that through keeping chup, by keeping silent, you cannot become silent. Chupa chupa na hovei. How does that make any sense, we might ask? What Guru Sahib is saying is that just by being quiet with your mouth, it won't quiet your mind. It won't bring a stillness to your mind. It won't allow you to bring self-realization to our truest, highest state. Be what am I inside? That just by being quiet, by not speaking, that you will not be able to reach a state where your mind is not wandering left, right, and center and jumping around. That even if I was to have your complete concentration will not be formed in your mind just by bringing about silence upon your lips. And there was a time, in fact, when we were in the when the Sangha was in the presence of the 10th master, Sri Guru Gobind Singh Ji, the king of all kings. And at that time, the Sangha was there, and a Monni came into the Sangha. A Monni being someone who would, in the Hindu Dharma practice, keeping themselves very quiet for long periods of time. In fact, the way it's described in our history in Suraj Prakash is that the extent to which this Monni had kept silence was not even known. When he had last spoken was not known to those people around him. If, in fact, he'd ever spoken out loud in public was not known. And the Sangha comes to Guru Sahib and they say to Guru Gobind Singh Ji that this is truly a person that is self-realized because he has been so quiet for so long. He's been practicing this way. And true to the way he's been described, the Monni is standing there with an ever so very solemn look upon their face. Guru Gobind Singh Ji Maharaj is speaking to the Sangha and he's speaking to the Khalsa and he's saying to the Sings that today we will bring about a truthful lesson. We will bring about destruction of falsehood and we will bring a truth to an understanding of what it means to be a Monni. Guru Sahib is looking at the Monni and he says to one of his Sikhs that take this Monni home with you. He is a person who is practicing his penance. Take him home with you and serve him well. Give him prasad in the morning and give him a donation of 25 rupees, which as you can imagine was a great deal of money at that time. The Khalsa understood Guru Gobind Singh's message. When Guru Sahib said to him that you must serve him the way you would eat in your house, serve him truthfully and serve him well. The Gursikh understood the message and the Monni is taken back with that Khalsa back to their home. And when he arrives home, he is put down in a nice bedding. And when the morning rises, when the sun rises, expecting to be fed perhaps delicious prasad and lots of different sabji and stuff like this, he finds himself being given two stale prasad, two stale rotiya and a glass of water. And the Monni is looking at this, completely surprised, having heard the instructions that the Gursikh has been given by Guru Gobind Singh Ji. And he tries to bite on the prasad. He tries to take a borki from one of the rotiya. And as he puts it in his mouth, he finds it so stale that he can't even chew it. It's bringing water to his eyes. And he takes the glass of water to try and digest the roti that he's putting into his mouth. He's becoming so angry that his eyes are turning red, but he won't say a word. No offering is made. And when the Gursikh takes Guru Gobind Singh Ji Maharaj back into the court of Guru Gobind Singh Ji, Guru Sahib asks, he says, did you serve him well? And the Gursikh is saying, yes. Did you give him prasad to the standard that should be provided in this circumstance? And the Gursikh says, yes, I served him well. And at that point, the Monni, who's completely consumed with anger, he cannot take it anymore and he speaks out and he starts shouting out loud, consumed with anger that couldn't be contained in his body anymore. And he says to Guru Gobind Singh Ji, no, he didn't serve me well. He didn't serve me well. He gave me stale prasad. There was no offering of the rupees that you spoke and he didn't give me nice food. It was stale prasad from the day before. No. And in this moment, Guru Sahib looks at the Sangha and everybody bursts out laughing. The teaching was given without any words needing to be spoken. And often this was the case. You see, Guru Gobind Singh Ji Maharaj, their jivan was a prachar. It wasn't just through their words that they were teachers. From the way that they would conduct themselves, they would give many lessons to the Sangha. And this was just one example. Guru Sahib was speaking out and teaching us that just by keeping quiet on your lips, that if your mind is running around left and right, if you haven't brought a stillness to your mind and you're not focusing on the Shabad and you're not one with the Shabad, that in this way you will not be able to just obtain self-realization. Hanji.
Pokhya pokhna uttari jaybanna puriya pare.
Pokhya pokhna uttari. Guru Nanak Dev Ji Maharaj is next asked by the Sidhs, but how about fasting? You've explained to us that washing your body will not help us become self-realized. We now understand that by being quiet, by being a munni, that you cannot obtain self-realization. But how about fasting? In both the Hindu dharam, women would fast for the well-being of their husbands. And in the Islamic faith, for 1 month of the year, they would hold fasts, even to this day. And Muslims do this in the month of Ramadan to serve their Lord in their own way of worship. And Guru Nanak Dev Ji Maharaj is saying, Pukhya pukhna uttari, that through abstaining from eating food, through fasting and in these sorts of practices, pukhna uttari, that you're not going to bring about a situation where you don't have that hunger inside you anymore. If you fast for a month, but then you're hungry every single day, and you find yourself craving, and you're going down to the chicken shop, for example, and you're there every single day feeding your body poisonous food. Or you are fasting for your husband, as the example given of the Hindus, for that short period of time, but otherwise you're not acting in a compassionate, kind way towards that same person. Then how is there any truth to this practice? Guru Sahib is saying, Pukhya pukhna uttari, that hunger will not go away. What hunger is Guru Sahib talking about? Yes, Guru Sahib is saying that through fasting, you will always remain hungry. You will not get to a place where your physical hunger will go away. But Guru Sahib is saying so much more than this. Guru Sahib is saying that through these sort of false practices of fasting, that the hunger for material attachment to this world will not be broken. In Suraj Prakash, there's an example from ancient scripture, from the Vedic scriptures, of a very ancient king whose name was Raghu. And Raghu was known to be very, very charitable in his deeds. He would always give to people that come and ask for him. And one day, a deceitful Brahmin comes into the court of the king and inquires as to his whereabouts. The queen receives him and she says to Raghu, she says to the Brahmin that the king is not available right now. What is it that you desire? And I can maybe, as his lady in his house, I can make the offering. The Brahmin says, I've actually come to request that he give me you. That he give me you, that your hand be given to me. The queen says that I am not able to offer myself, for I belong only to the king. You should wait until he returns, and then you can make your request of him. A while later, the king returns, and the Brahmin requests that his wife be given to him as a gift. Raghu, known to be ever compassionate and kind, he makes the offering of the queen to him and says, are you now happy? The Brahmin says, thank you for this offering of this queen, but where will I be able to house her? A house fit for queen is not in my own keeping. What can I have to house this lady? And at that point, Raghu says, I will give you my palace, I will give you my kingdom. And the Brahmin says, well, you've given me your kingdom now, you've given me your palace, but how am I going to feed and look after this queen in this palace? And so he offers all of his wealth and all of his riches. How am I going to protect all of this wealth from armies that are going to come forth and attack to try and take this kingdom? And the king makes him a gift of all of his armies, and eventually he gives up all that there is sovereign to him, leaving everything to the Brahmin. Raghu, realizing that attachment to all of these worldly possessions were of no avail, and he finds himself sitting in the jungle meditating upon the Lord. Meditating upon the Lord, he obtains such an avastha that he recognizes that he's not at any loss. And Narad Muni, who is one of the Devi Devta, one of the 33 million incarnations of God in the Hindu scriptures, Narad Muni, being the son of Brahma, comes and sees him and says, you've been so pure in your actions that I'm going to give you a gift of this fruit. The fruit is called amar, meaning like timeless fruit. Because if you eat this fruit, your youth will never end. Raghu, being ever the benevolent person, having received this gift from Narad Muni, what does he do? He says that Brahman was so old. I am so much younger than him. My wife is so much younger than him. He's going to age so much faster than she. I will go and give the Brahman this amar fruit so that he can look after my wife and he will be useful and his age will match hers. He goes to see the Brahman who's so conceited and absorbed and ever unsatisfied with all of the offerings and gifts that life has given him. He sees the king coming. Raghu, the king, is coming and he offers the amar fruit, that immortal fruit. And the Brahman is like, he's obviously up to some tricks. He realizes that I've tricked him into giving me his whole kingdom. He says, I don't want anything from you. And he takes the fruit and he throws it on the floor, having it buried in the ground. And sends Raghu back into the forest, away out of sight and away out of mind. A time comes to pass where the queen, she is scolding one of her servants. And she scolds her so badly that the servant decides that she wants to kill herself. The Brahman has been telling everybody that the king had tried to return and tried to poison me with this fruit, and I've buried it in the ground, believing it to be some sort of a poisonous gift. Thinking that there's no way out of the suffering that she's going to suffer, this maid, she remembers this poisonous fruit that the Brahman had spoken of, and she digs it out of the ground to kill herself, to end her suffering. And lo and behold, she becomes so very beautiful in her youth. The Brahman sees the maid, and she's like, he's like, what? What's happened to you? She goes, I ate that fruit. It turns out that the king of Agu, he wasn't telling any lies at all. The Brahman, his thirst is still strong in his mind. What does he do? He searches out the king in the forest. He goes and finds him, and he says, yo, I need that fruit. I've got all of this kingdom. I'm never going to have enough time to spend all of the wealth that I've taken from you. I need that fruit, please. What you offered me, you were right to offer me before. Can you find it again for me? And the king explains that through his own tap, that he had sight of Narad Muni. And they search out Narad Muni, and they ask Narad Muni, I'm cutting the history very short because of time constraints. But in essence, they go on a journey, and Narad Muni directs him to one of the senior Devi Devta, whose name was Shivji. He's the god of destruction, if you like, in the Hindu Dharma. And Shivji says that fruit could be found from a tree, an immortal tree. And if you go to that tree, you'll be able to find this fruit which is born forth on that tree. And so Narad Muni, Shivji, the Brahman, the conceited Brahman, who was never satisfied in his mind, and King Raghu, they go towards this tree. Underneath the tree, they find a sign. And the sign says, this tree is now a gift to King Raghu, that one who is always ever benevolent in his gifts, always looking to give others what he has, he will forever in the world hereafter find a place of immortality. And so this tree belongs to him. The Brahman turns immediately to the king and says, yo, I need this tree. Please, can you make a gift of this tree? You've given me so much, now give me this tree. He's about to give this tree, and the divine form Vishnu, who is one of the senior consorts of God, one of the senior forms of God in the Hindu Dharma, he's in the heavens looking down. And he's like, this Brahman, he just doesn't let up. He won't ever stop asking for things. And if he gets his tree, even my own kingdom will be threatened. And for such wisdom to be given to someone who is so unwise, what would he use his powers for? Only to take and take and take. And so he brings about that this Brahman falls into the river and he drowns. But the point of the Sakhi, as Kavi Santokhsiji talks about it in Sudhir Prakash, is that he was given the most beautiful queen. He was given a kingdom to house her, all of the wealth of the world. He was offered the fruit of truth and life, immortal. But even then, that book inside him keep wanting more and more and more. It wouldn't end. It was always gnawing away inside of him until it brought about his demise. My brothers and sisters, we need to recognize that we are chasing every single day a food, not just for our stomachs, but the food that we're feeding our mind. Constant Instagram just feeding away. Social media just taking megabytes out of our brain, if you like. But that book, when has it ever come to a point you've gone, I'm completely full and satisfied. What post have you ever read or watched or put up that you've now thought, hang about, I no longer need any more? Bukhiya buk na uttari je banna puri apar. Guru Nanak Dev Ji is saying, je banna, if we had all of the gifts of all of this world, puri apar, from all of the heavens, if they were all brought down upon us and given to us as gifts, even then, that book will never end. And it's really interesting, actually. So I practice litigation law, and I've practiced for a number of years. And the particular profession that I undertake gives me a unique insight into people's lives. And I'll just share something further that's coming to my mind. I generally meet people in only bad circumstances. They don't come and see a lawyer to celebrate the birth of their new son. It's generally someone's fallen over, someone's not paid a debt, or someone's in difficulties, and in this way they'll find themselves coming to see me about the litigation they dispute. But one particular client that came to see me really stands out in my mind, and I don't think I'll ever forget this particular transaction I was involved with. He was very, very wealthy. He had about sort of like maybe 30 or 40 houses that were all completely paid off. Every month he would earn like maybe £60,000 rent that would go into his bank account, and then no matter how much he spent, by next month it would be replenished with a new monthly payments from his tenants. It's a little like one of those computer games you've got unlimited lives. It doesn't matter what you do, but next month you just get replenished. You just recreate. You're reborn. You respawn. I think that's the word in Call of Duty. You just respawn, right? And what happens is he comes to see me and he's going to do a transaction. And it's a very risky transaction. It's bordering on fraudulent, if you like. And I'm advising that this is not right, you shouldn't do this, you're going to get yourself stuck in all sorts of bother. And I speak to him at length about this, trying to convince him that, look, you don't need this, man. You're doing all right. Just be happy with what you've got. You know, progress what you're doing. But he keeps saying no and no and no. And so he invests over £1 million, I'll say, in this transaction. And it turns out that the transaction wasn't successful. He loses all of the money that he's put into this transaction. And I see him a few months later, and his skin has gone pale, his face looks like it's withering away. And I said to him, what are you doing? Because I'm going to do this, I've got that plan, I've got this transaction going forward. I go, what's your game plan? You know, that's failed, you've lost that money, what's your game plan? And what he said, I think, really stayed with me for a long time. I asked him, what is he looking to achieve? He goes, I just want to get back to where I was. If I can just make enough money to get me back to a place where I was, I'll be happy. He wasn't looking to progress and go beyond that. He was just at a place where he recognized the value of the meal that was on his table then that he can no longer eat. And if he could just eat that meal now, he's saying he wouldn't want any others. And I think the valuable lesson that we can take from that we need to have content, we need to recognize that this world is going to keep giving us an appetite. You'll be eating from this world until the day you die, but you're never going to be satisfied. And I'm not just talking about the food that we eat, I'm talking about the food that we're feeding our mind. Guru Nanak Dev Ji Maharaj is offering a different type of satisfaction. Because when you take the langar of Shabad, Guru Nanak Dev Ji talks about langar being Shabad as well. When you put that food in your mind, you'll get a contentment, you'll get a happiness, and that appetite will cease. We call this Bairag. Bairag meaning bear without, rag, love. So when you fall out of love with all of these worldly attachments, such that you are totally in love with the Shabad. And when that happens, a contentment will be born forth. Just like King Raghu, when he saw no loss in having given up his own kingdom and walking into the forest and meditating upon that name of the Lord, that even when he was given immortal fruit, he saw only how he could use that to serve others. That the worldly hunger will never be satisfied. Hanji.
Sahas se an pa lakh ho hai, ta ik na chale naal.
Sahas se an pa. So syanapa, meaning syanap, like syanap thoughts. So Guru Nanak Dev Ji Maharaj is being asked now by the Sidhs, how about collecting worldly knowledge? If we collect all of the Veds, if we collect all of the Qurans, if we collect the Quran, if we collect the Quran, and all of the scriptures and memorize all of the verses, that in this way, can we obtain self-realization? Can we become one with God? And Guru Nanak Dev Ji is making it so beautifully clear that sehsyanapa lakhoi lakhohe, that even if you have all the syana of 100,000, meaning luck in this context, meaning an infinite amount of knowledge in this world, that even if you have all the knowledge of this world, that even in all of this knowledge, that place which we're going to go to beyond this world, that place of truth which we call Satchkhand, the realm of truth, where Guru Nanak Dev Ji resides, where Waheguru, the realm of truth, resides, that in that place none of these things are going to go with you. Not even the clothes on your back, not even any of the materialistic things that you might come to own. But even more closer to home, Guru Nanak is saying, even the thoughts that you have in your mind, all the cleverness, all the tricks that you might bring about, all of the manipulations that you might learn in this world, that none of these things are going to go with you. And that's actually quite a scary thought. Because we are collecting so much knowledge in this world, and we think that this is all very, very useful. But Guru Sahib is saying, actually, all of this knowledge is of no use whatsoever. Guru Sahib makes it so plainly clear. That nothing is of any avail. That we only have one thing to do, which is to come together in the Sadh Sangat and do Simran. Hanji.
Kev sachyara hoiye, kev kure tutte pale.
So this is now the Sidhs. The Sidhs are speaking to Guru Nanak and they're saying, we've asked you these four questions. We've asked you about cleanliness, we've asked you about keeping quiet, we've asked you about fasting and such like practices, we've asked you about being syana, about collecting worldly knowledge. And you said that all of these four practices, which were the main practices of the people of the time, you said that they're all false and that none of them can bring about self-realization. Now the Siddhas are asking Guru Nanak, give satyara hoiye. Give, meaning how, satyara. In which way then can we bring about cleanliness of the inside? Give kure tutte paal. Give how, kure, the dirt, tutte. How can we bring about breaking all of these bonds that we have of attachment? How can we bring about a cleanliness within our own selves? And Siddhi Guru Nanak Dev Ji replies,
Hukam rajai chalana Nanak likhya naal.
Guru Nanak Dev Ji says, Hukam rajai chalana Nanak likhya naal. Hukam, the command, the order. Rajai, raza, meaning the way of that order. That Guru Nanak Dev Ji is saying, chalana, that if you go in the way of the Lord, if you go and are in acceptance of the way of the Lord, that in this way, that you can obtain self-realization. What Guru Nanak Dev Ji Maharaj is teaching us is that through acceptance of Waheguru's hukam, through acceptance of the hukam and by living in accordance to that hukam, that we can become one with God, that we can merge with Waheguru and have that contentment where all of that book inside us is destroyed and we have a state of complete inner contentment. Hukam can be translated two ways. In one way, we can take hukam to mean, if you like, God's world play, what He has planned out for each and every one of us, as determined by our karma. Karma meaning our previous actions, our lekha. And by living in acceptance of Waheguru's hukam, by living in acceptance of that one who is in charge of all things, a wonderful thing will happen. We can ourselves let go of responsibility of what's happening to us. So oftentimes we try to play the victim. We're living our lives and we're saying that the way things have panned out for us, it shouldn't have been this way. That this is not fair. But if we accept that we are living inside of Waheguru's hukam, then what we are doing is we're saying that everything is perfect and we can let go of this victim mentality that allows us, that excuses us from making progress and going forward. If we're living in accordance with the hukam, what we can do is we can accept that sattva, whatever is happening to me is a gift. This is all in accordance with that world play. And it allows you to move forward. So I'll give you a wonderful example that Gyani Kulwansingh gives, which is really, really powerful and makes the point so poignantly. They said that as a baby, when a baby is sort of just starting to walk, and when a baby sort of knocks into a pillar or walks into something, you just see it's wonderful, they just bounce. They go in the air and they just fall on the floor and they roll and they just get back up and they crack on. There's no pain. Everyone else is like, oh my God, are you okay? But the child itself is just on to the next task, completely unawares of what's occurred to him, no injuries. But as we get old, because that child is living in accordance with life with a hukum, the gravity will take it, has no issue with that, it doesn't know what's going on, it's completely unawares, it's living in that hukum, if you like, in that moment. But as we get older, our ego is taking control of us, and we're looking at our hands and we're thinking, what can we do? We're in control, what can I do moving forward? How can I resolve my daily affairs? And if you look at an elderly person whose bones are very brittle, if they bump into a pillow or they bump into a wall and they fall over, they do what they think is best. They do the opposite of the baby. Baby's vapor of all, carefree. And so in that relaxed state, the baby's going to do what they call an MMA breakfall. It just falls and just gets back up, just chilling. But the old man or the old woman will go, completely tense everything that they can to brace themselves, which is the opposite of what needs to be done to successfully fall unharmed. And that old person will fall over, they'll break their hip, they'll hurt themselves in some way. And what Gyani Kulwansingh is saying is that we should be more like that baby, being in acceptance of the hukum, which means that if you fall, we're in the court of God, and that all of these rules will be played out just fine. But when we start not accepting that hukum, and we're trying to control things ourselves, that's when we're going to get into difficulties, mental difficulties. That's when we're going to get into difficulties in not being able to accept what is going on around us. The second way that we can interpret hukum is, what is the Guru's hukum? What is the Guru's command for us? And Guru Sahib is giving us the command that we should wake early in the morning and that we should do simran. Guru's hukum is that we should wake early in the morning, do simran and do anishanen. That we should do kirt, that we should do honest work. That we should share what we have with other people. We should be kind and compassionate in our actions and have love for all people, recognizing that compassion is the way forward. So, hukum ada jaye jalana nanaka likhya na. Another interpretation of that bhakti, when the Sidhs are asking Guru Nanak, well, how do we go about obtaining cleanliness? Guru Nanak is saying, nanaka likhya na. That you can find the truth, you can find the answers in the Shabbat. Likhya, that in the Shabbat that the answers you will find. Which is why, as we've been singing in Sturbar, you have seen Sangat walking in and placing their head on the floor before Guru Sahib. Because we all know that the answers are in Guru Granth Sahib Ji Maharaj. And if there was any doubt, Guru Nanak Dev Ji Maharaj has made it plainly clear to us all. So we've spoken about the four questions that the Sidhs asked about the practices of the time, how Guru Nanak has dispelled that falsehood, and explain that it is actually not through those false practices that we can obtain oneness with God, but actually it is through acceptance of Wahguru's hukum, by living in accordance of the bana, Guru. By accepting all that happens as good, and following the Guru's hukum day to day, that we can become one with God. Next week, the Sidhs are going to be asking Guru Nanak Dev Ji about, can you expand upon what this word hukum means? Can you explain to us how it works? What do we know as being hukum? Is this hukum or is that hukum? And in this way, we will deepen our understanding, and hopefully Guru Sahib will bring us closer towards them in our understanding of Japji Sahib. I will have made many mistakes in trying to narrate to you the teachings of Guru Nanak Dev Ji Maharaj. I ask, because you are the Satsangat, and through your blessings, we can maybe one day properly and fully serve the Satsangat. We're going to finish by all collectively just reciting the first bhakti of this belly body of Japji Sahib, and then we're going to say the Guru's blessed Fateh.
Socha soch na hovei, je sochi lakhwar. Chupa chup na hovei, je lae raha livtar. Pukhya puk na utari, ਜੇ ਮੰਨਾ ਪੁਰਿਆ ਪਾਰ ਸਹਿਸ ਸਿਆਣਪਾ ਲਖ ਹੋਏ ਤਾਂ ਇੱਕ ਨਾ ਚੱਲੈ ਨਾਲ ਕਿਵ ਸਚਿਆਰਾ ਹੋਈਐ ਕਿਵ ਕੂੜੈ ਤੁੱਟੈ ਪਾਲ ਹੁਕਮ ਰਜਾਈ ਚੱਲਣਾ ਨਾਨਕ ਲਿਖਿਆ ਨਾਲ ਵਾਹਿਗੁਰੂ ਜੀ ਕਾ ਖਾਲਸਾ ਵਾਹਿਗੁਰੂ ਜੀ ਕੀ